my neck, the smell of death and rotting meat. I enter a small clearing. I expect the beast's wrath to fall any second, expect its teeth and claws to rip me to shreds. I pull myself forward until I can go no more, my back against an oak tree. The beast stands in the very center of the clearing, 30 feet away from me. I look at it fully for the first time, a looming figure, hazy in the dark and the cold of the night, taller and bigger than the beast at the school. 40 feet, standing upright on 2 hind legs, thick, gray skin stretched tightly over slabs of bulging muscle. No neck, its head sloped so that its lower jaw protrudes farther out than its upper. A set of fangs points towards the sky. Another set points to the ground, dripping blood and drool. Long, thick arms hang a foot or two above the ground, even while the beast stands straight, giving it the appearance of slightly leaning forward. Yellow eyes. Round discs at the sides of its head that pulsate with the beating of its heart, the only sign that it has any sort of heart at all. It leans forward and brings its left hand to the ground. A hand complete with stubby short fingers with claws like a raptor. Claws meant to rip apart anything they touch. It sniffs at me and roars. An ear-splitting roar that would have pushed me backwards if I weren't already against a tree. Its mouth opens, showing what must be 50 other teeth. Each one every bit as sharp as the next. Its free hand thrusts away from its side and splits in half every tree that it strikes. 10, 15 of them. No more running. No more fighting. Blood from the knife wounds runs down my back. My hands and legs are both shaking. The dagger is still tucked into the waistband of my jeans, but what's the point in grabbing it? What faith is there in a 4-inch blade against a 40-foot beast? It would be the equivalent of a splinter. It'll only make it angrier. My only hope is to bleed to death before I am killed and eaten. I close my eyes and accept death. My lights are off. I don't want to see what is about to happen. I hear movement behind me. I open my eyes. One of the Mogadorians must be moving in for a closer look, I think at first, but I know immediately that I am wrong. There is something familiar about the loping gait, something I recognize in the sound of his breathing. And then he enters the clearing. Bernie Kosar. I smile, but the smile quickly fades. If I am doomed, there is no point in him dying too. No, Bernie Kosar, you can't be here. You need to leave and you need to run like the wind. Get as far away as you can. Pretend you've just finished our early morning jog to school and that it's time to return home. He looks at me as he walks up. I am here, he seems to say. I am here and I will stand with you. No, I say aloud. He stops long enough to give my hand a reassuring lick. He looks up at me with his big brown eyes. Get away, John, I hear in my mind. Crawl if you have to crawl, but get away now. The blood loss has made me delusional. Bernie seems to be communicating with me. Is Bernie Kosar even here, or am I imagining that as well? He stands in front of me as though in protection. He begins to growl, low at first, but it grows to a growl every bit as ferocious as the beast's own roar. The beast fixates on Bernie Kosar. A stare down. Bernie Kosar's hair is raised down the center of his back, his tan ears pinned to his head. His loyalty, his bravery, very nearly make me weep. He's 100 times smaller than the beast, yet he stands tall, vowing to fight. One quick strike from the beast, and all is done. I reach my hand out to Bernie Kosar. I wish I could stand and grab him and get away. His growls are so fierce that his whole body shakes, tremors coursing through him, and then something begins to happen. Bernie Kosar begins to grow. Chapter 32. After all this time, only now do I understand. The morning runs, when I would run too fast for him to keep pace, he would disappear into the woods, reappear seconds later in front of me. Six tried to tell me. Six took one look at him, and she knew immediately. On those runs, Bernie Kosar went into the woods to change himself, to turn himself into a bird. The way he would rush outside each morning, nose to the ground, patrolling the yard, protecting me and Henri, looking for signs of the Mogadorians. The gecko in Florida. The gecko that used to watch from the wall while I ate breakfast. How long has he been with us? The chimera. The ones I watched being loaded into the rocket. Did they make it to Earth after all? Bernie Kosar continues to grow. He tells me to run. I can communicate with him. No, that's not all. I can communicate with all animals. Another legacy. It started with the deer in Florida on the day that we left. The shudder that ran up my spine as it passed something along to me, some feeling. I attributed it to the sadness of our leaving, but I was wrong. Mark James's dogs, the cows I passed on my morning runs, the same thing. I feel like such a fool to discover it only now, so blatantly obvious right in front of my face. Another of Henri's adages, those things that are most obvious are the very things we're most likely to overlook. But Henri knew. That is why he said no to Six when she tried to tell me. Bernie Kosar is done growing. His hair has fallen away, replaced by oblong scales. He looks like a dragon, but without the wings. His body is thick with muscle, jagged teeth and claws, horns that curl like a ram's. Thicker than the beast, but far shorter, looking every bit as menacing. Two giants on opposite sides of the clearing, roaring at one another. Run, he tells me. I try to tell him that I can't. I don't know if he can understand me. You can, he says. You must. The beast swings. A hammer swing that starts in the clouds and pours down with brutality. Bernie Kosar blocks it with his horns and then charges before the beast can swing again. A colossal collision in the very center of the clearing. Bernie Kosar thrusts up, sinks his teeth into the beast's side. The beast knocks him back, both of them so quick that it defies all logic, bleeding gashes already down the sides of each. I watch with my back against the tree. I try to help, but my telekinesis is still failing me. Blood still pours down my back. My limbs feel heavy, as though my blood has turned to lead. I can feel myself fading. The beast is still upright on two legs, while Bernie Kosar must fight on four. The beast makes a charge. Bernie Kosar lowers his head, and they smash into one another, crashing through the trees off to my right side. Somehow, the beast ends up on top. It sinks its teeth deep in Bernie Kosar's throat. It thrashes, trying to tear his throat out. Bernie Kosar twists under the beast's bite, but he can't shake free. He tears at the beast's hide with his paws, but the beast doesn't let go. Then a hand reaches out behind me, grabs my arm. I try to push it away, but I'm incapable of doing even that. Bernie Kosar's eyes are closed tightly. He is straining under the beast's jaw, his throat constricted, unable to breathe. No! I yell. Come on! The voice yells behind me. We need to get out of here! The dog! I say, not comprehending whose voice it is. The dog! Bernie Kosar is being bitten and choked, about to die, and there isn't a damn thing I can do about it. I won't be far behind. I would sacrifice my own life for his. I scream out. Bernie Kosar twists his head around and looks at me, his face scrunched tightly in pain and agony, and the oncoming death he must feel. We have to go! The voice behind me yells, the hand pulling me up from off the forest floor. Bernie Kosar's eyes stay fixed on mine. Go, he says to me.